Well, I took a little vacation while I was gone. Did you guys do anything fun?
We didn't hang out with you.
That sounds terrible.
For a brief second, though, Jimmy and I did.
We both came up on Wednesday morning. I was like, "Hey, what's up? Where's Bob?" Bob's away. Oh, we both remembered at the same time. Like, okay, cool. See you. Have a great day. We were both so happy to go run and do our own thing.
But we're also happy to be here right now.
We couldn't, make it sound like this is a huge convenience for you.
We couldn't jump off fast enough, the both of us.
Yeah.
Jimmy said goodbye, but the computer program went away before the word bye even hit. So.
I have so much stuff to do that day. I was working on the go-kart. I was building the go-kart last week. I modified a go-kart. I didn't build it. I got to be very careful. As people remind me in the comments. This year I ran out of time. My go-kart event is this Saturday, the 13th of July. Some people cannot get that. I've answered family members and close friends umpteen times. Saturday the 13th, noon to 6. Saturday the 13th, noon to 6. Record this and play it back. If you're going to hear this and go, Sunday? How much does it cost? What time does it start? That's what I've been dealing with. And it's funny, I was sitting with Rob a couple of days ago, we were eating together, and I said that to him. I said, yeah, nobody seems to get it right. And he just kind of like, was like, whatever. And then like a second later, somebody was texting him going, Sunday the 13th? He's like, no, Saturday the 13th. It's just a weird, I don't know.
Huh.
It's a weird, one of my favorite energy around that date.
One of my favorite things to do, and that's an exaggeration, but I love like when somebody says, hey, I am looking for... I'm looking to hire somebody who can do X whatever. Here are the instructions. And those instructions usually are go to this particular website, fill out this form or whatever. But I love going into the comments to read everybody applying through the comments, not following the directions. People just don't follow directions anymore.
No.
Yes, you're right. A few weeks ago, I sent out like a Instagram story. I was looking for somebody, and I'm still looking for somebody to do merch design. Like somebody who, a good designer, not just like a, hey, look, I bought Photoshop that one time. And so I laid out what I wanted, and I said, the way that you let me know that you're available is you send me your favorite piece of work that you've done. One single piece of work that you've done that you think is representative of you. And I got everything except that. I got like, here's my favorite year's worth of work. And here's the thing that I really like that I hope I can design one of these days. And, you know, it was just like, good work. But yes, they had trouble with but that very specific instruction. I think I got one. Maybe that was right. But anyway, I actually didn't get that many responses to that. That's something that I was kind of like, you know, gearing myself up for. I'm asking for input because anytime you ask social media of any size for input, you get this, typically you get a flood of response that a lot of it's not relevant. Some of it is. A lot of times it's just a gateway for somebody, for other people to be able to ask things that they don't normally ask or whatever. And I really didn't get very many responses to that, which was really surprising. And maybe it was because I was very specific about, you know, I only want this kind of thing. But so I didn't find a merch designer, by the way. Forby has done all the t-shirts in the past and stuff. And we're just like, he's still working on some, but we just want to try to come up with some new, you know, new graphics stuff. So, oh, I had another thought based on the thing. I don't know what it was. So, are you excited about the go-kart
The event's gonna,
race? Are you expecting a lot of people?
It seems like it. Yeah, this is the first year of the last three in a row, maybe four in a row. I don't know if this is the fifth or the fourth one. I can't remember. No, it's the fourth one because the first one was 2020 and COVID. Was it July? It might have been 21. Remember anymore. And it was... this is the first one where I'm being tagged in a lot of builds because people are building a lot of stuff. People that haven't been here before and some people who I don't know, that I don't recall meeting. And there's going to be a lot of interesting vehicles, which is my vision for the whole thing. I wanted people to just make crazy stuff. There's no real official race. There's no trophy. A lot of people are like, what time does the race start? I don't want to miss it. It's just guys hanging out, showing off things they made. And Yeah, it's just a track day, guys, showing off things they made. If you do plan on coming and you do plan on riding, if you don't feel like wearing a moldy, dusty old motorcycle helmet, bring your own if you have one, because I want to make sure everybody on the track wears a helmet this year. It's really important. Last year we had a little accident. Nobody got hurt, but the guys that actually collided with each other were both wearing helmets. They're kind of like semi-professional riders, and they come and they bring these crazy go-karts that fly, and they were on the track together, and they hit each other.
They fly? I don't think that's a go-kart.
No, it's crazy. These guys are fun. And I think their wheels touched, and they rode over each other. You know, it's kind of a dangerous thing when you have open-wheel racing. Mm. Everybody was fine, but it was a scary moment. So everybody collectively agreed next year everybody has to have a helmet. And I have my go-kart that I just made, which was started from a lot of people seem to know what a dingo is. It's this sort of like Sears and Roebuck-y kind of looking thing, made probably in the 80s. I modified it. I cut it. I made it longer. I put a new motor on it and some new parts and adjusted the pedals and the brakes. And it's fun. It's fun. I've made two previously, and I've never made a go-kart, so from scratch with just my own tubing. And so they're a little sketchy, but getting something like this, even though I modified it, getting something like this that's sort of factory made, where all the steering and everything is thought through well, it is so much fun to drive and just beat the hell out. It's on my Instagram. You can see me doing twists and turns and having a lot of fun with it. And then getting more confidence, I went back and I fixed the coffin go-kart, which was the first one I made. I redid the steering the other night. It was a fairly quick job. I cut the steering completely out and redid it. More mechanical direct steering instead of a rack and pinion that I bought on Amazon, which was a piece of junk. And then I took it out in the backyard and I was ripping and roaring and the rear wheel broke off. So it was just the crummy axle from Amazon. So I ordered a new axle. If it comes, I'll switch it. But in the meantime, I did fix it just so I could at least roll it around. And I probably shouldn't drive it on the gravel and in the backyard, the bumpy backyard, because it's a real low profile. It's only a couple inches off the ground, and it's this little race tires. It'll probably be okay on the track, on like a flat track. But in the meantime, I have a new axle coming. Might come in just in the nick of time. But it's been a lot of fun doing all these mechanical improvisations and just learning from my mistakes. It's funny, the mechanical, I don't know what it's called. Dave, do you guys have those on your racers, where the clutch centrifugally changes ratio?
No, we differential? Do shift gears. You choose your gear before the race.
So this is a variable speed clutch. When I went on Amazon 3 years ago to make my first go-kart, I just bought a bunch of go-kart parts. And I bought one. I didn't even know what it was. I knew what it was, but I didn't have any idea how to implement it or use it. So the first year I bought all these parts, and I have a storage unit with all the parts in it. So this year, I was like, now I understand how that works, and I know how to implement it. So I went and got the one I bought a few years ago and attached it to the motor. Yeah, so I'm learning. I was like, wow, that was so easy, where a couple of years ago I was completely mystified by this part and how to use it and where it bolts on. So
what is it? Is it you said it's a variable speed clutch? Is it like an auto shifter kind of thing?
It's a direct drive. Yeah. Well, not exactly. It's a direct drive to one of the pulleys, and then there's a belt on it that goes to another pulley, which is the drive pulley. And when you rev the gas, the pulleys change shape. Do you ever see like a V pulleys on a drill press?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It changes the ratio by changing how far apart the two cone shaped pulleys are.
Yeah. So there is no gear. There's an infinite amount in between.
Interesting.
So, yeah. There's no
CTV
gear ratio.
Everyone keeps answering CT. I'm like, okay, what the? It's initials for something. So just the learning curve has been great, and now next year I'll build something from scratch, and my confidence level is up. All that to say, I had fun.
Cool. Good. David, I haven't heard you talk about go-karting in a very, very long time.
Yeah, races. Yeah, I only raced two races last year, and I haven't done any races this year. It's just the desire to do so isn't there as much. I still love it, but it's gotten so big that it's not as fun as it used to be. So the league that I run in is like a, it's like a backyard grassroots type thing, because the professional races weren't fun. The professional races would have like 8 divisions and it would be an 8-hour event. And so these people started this backyard thing between these 8 different tracks, and it was just one division. And it, and when I got into it, 25 people would show up. And now it's like a minimum of 50 people show up, and they have to divide the field into, there's heat race, there's qualifying heat races and then features. And they, it's gotten so big that they divide it up so everybody can make a feature. So then they have multiple features. But when you get that many people together, there's a lot more, it's a longer day. People get angry because there's bumping in racing, and it's supposed to be for fun. People forget about that. And it's also expensive. It takes a lot of time, not just the day of racing, but all the time you got to put in for motor maintenance. If you want to be competitive, you have to do all these things to make sure. Like, it's just, there's so many, I have too many hobbies. And this is the hobby that sometimes can be very frustrating because people aren't always there to have fun.
Is this the beginning of a career path to real racing for some people?
It's actually the end for a lot. It's both. So in my area of the world, racing's pretty big. So there's especially dirt oval racing. We have, if you know what sprint cars are, there's modifieds, there's late models, and these are all, there's a bunch of tracks in this area. There's a bunch of tracks across the country, but it's pretty big in this area. Dirt track racing is pretty big. And the go-kart racing that we do is kind of like, a lot of drivers start off that as juniors, as kids, and then they work their way up to sprint cars. And lots of people drive sprint cars professionally. Lots of people just do it as a weekend thing, but it's a super expensive thing. Motors are like $15,000. A trailer is $100,000. Like it's a lifestyle. There are a lot of sprint car drivers in our league who do it for fun. There's a lot of older people that always wanted to do it. But this is kind of like the budget-friendly way of getting into racing. And then there are some younger people that want to progress up into more of the professional sprint car racing. So it's all over the place. But for somebody like me, I always wanted to race. And now as a 49-year-old person, it's a way for me to do that. So.
Cool. Well, I'm sorry that it's, you know, people have made it more complicated and
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's rough. That's got to be annoying when you
put sure. some cookie decoration on it.
The professional tracks that you run at, you pay an entry fee, you pay a pit fee, and then you win money at the end. But this particular backyard league, there's no entry fee, there's no pit fee, there's no purse, so there's no, you don't win any money. You just get a trophy. Everything is through sponsors and donations. And people are fighting over a freaking trophy. And
weird.
Yeah. And I think it's a natural part of racing, especially when you race this close, and there's you're naturally going to bump, you're naturally going to cut somebody off or get cut off, and you're really into it, and so tempers can fly, and it's just it's just not always fun.
So now that it's grown to a certain point, you should start another
right.
backyard league that's even more backyard,
right.
And you can call it "It's Supposed to Be Fun Racing."
Yeah.
Like just like put it in the name, so every time.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a bummer.
And it's man, I have learned so much though since I got into it like 5 years ago or whatever. Like I built my own. Well, I haven't in a year and a half, but I've built my own engines from scratch and tearing apart. And I now know how an engine works. Maybe it's just a single cylinder engine, but that translates to a car engine. Yeah, I have a pretty good understanding. And I could take I can take an engine, at least a go-kart engine, I can take it completely apart, put it back together. I have all the tools to do so. I've learned so much about setup and tires and racing lines. Like, it's been a really fun journey. And I got to win. I've won 3 races. And that's pretty impressive after only doing it for a little bit. So, yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Speaking of rebuilding engines, can I give you a little Land Cruiser update?
Please.
Because it's been a while.
On the main show? We're going to do this on the main show?
Yeah, we're doing it on the main show just because of the level of frustration that I'm feeling. Okay, so I haven't talked about it in a while on purpose because it's just because it's frustrating. Yeah. Oh man, I have another remind me in the after show. I have another very, very frustrating thing to tell you that's unrelated from my trip, my vacation that I went on.
Frustration.
Yes. I don't get frustrated a whole lot these days. I don't get angry a whole lot these days, but this event got me almost violently angry.
It's not impossible, is it?
That's probably an overstatement, but I was very angry. Anyway, okay, so back to the Land Cruiser. So, before I left, like, a couple of weeks ago, I've been on 2 trips in the last 3 weeks. So before I left to one of them, the cruiser had been in the garage at the shop in a bay for about a month. And the whole time, the guy was like, yeah, I got the remachined head, because the problem, they thought, was that the head had not been machined correctly. The new head, the new head, there were 2 engines, right? And we rebuilt the new engine, which is also an old engine, but we rebuilt that. That head had a problem, so they took the head off the original engine that was seized, and then they remachined that to put it on a new engine. That was going to be the fix, right? So he was telling me for several weeks, it's like, in there, I've got the head, I just got to put the head on, which is, you know, I'm no mechanic, but I think that's like an afternoon's worth of work, I think. So, several weeks. So I talked to him right before I left for this trip, and I said, hey man, I would really like my car back. What is going on? And he said, well, the boss told me that I had to have it out by July 4th.
That's your birthday.
I'm like, great, I will be gone for a week, so it should be done when I get back, right? And he's like, yep, that'll give me time to test it, put it through its paces, make sure everything's good. Cool. I didn't hear anything the whole trip, which I didn't really expect to, but I get back, call him Monday, first thing. Hey man, can I come get my car? Well, I put it back together. I came in over the weekend, spent my Saturday here, even though we were closed, and I got the whole thing put back together, and I took it out to drive it, and I blew the head gasket.
What? Oh my goodness.
And I'm like, what in the world? So it turns out, after taking it apart again, he figured out that the company that machined, that rebuilt the motor, that machined the whole thing, they did not surface the top of the block, and it had pitting in the top of the block.
That's one of the things that you do when you
exactly. Like, what are you rebuilding if you're not machining the block? That is the thing. You surface the two things so that they stick together and there are no holes for things to be blown out. That's like, I know that, and I'm not even like an engine guy. So he's like, and the mechanic is like furious too, you know. He's like, I don't know why, I don't know what they did. I don't know why it sat there in their shop for a year and a half.
On the engine block.
They bored, as I understand it, they bored the cylinders and they did everything else, but they never surfaced the top of the block. And so there was pitting, which caused then the gasket to blow out, you know, with the pressure on the inside of the end. So he's furious, and he's like, I spent my Saturday rebuilding this thing again, and now I have to, this was a couple days ago, he was like, so today and tomorrow I'm pulling the whole block again, I'm driving it up there as soon as I get it out of your truck, this is like an hour away at the machine shop. The guy promised me that it would be at the front of the line as soon as we get it there, he will start working on it, it'll take him about a week to completely redo everything, and he listed off all the different things that the guy was going to do. Which I assume were all real things, but I don't really know. I mean, the guy could have just been like, you know, the flux capacitor's got to be re-homed. Or I don't know, whatever. So he gives me this big list of things that has to be done. And says that, you know, the guy should take about a week, typically, and then he'll get it back. And he said that he already told everybody in his shop that he's not doing anything else until the truck is running once he gets it back. So, basically nothing happened.
My
basically nothing has changed in... And let me tell you the time frame here. Today is the 10th of July. So in 5 days, that I will have... I dropped off the engine 25 months ago.
And now they're going to do 25 months. They're going to do 25
months worth
of work.
And in 1 month.
Because they realize they got to get it the hell out.
Start
over.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, why didn't you just... Yeah, just do it in a week in the first place, and then
now,
you save everybody 2 years.
Who's going to pay for this, all this That's other stuff? Crazy. Everyone's going to begrudgingly do all the work angrily.
So that was a question. And I'm a little worried about that, too, because, like, he, you know, the mechanic is, like, now super frustrated and just wants to get it out. And I trust the guy. I don't trust the machine shop. In fact, this guy was like, you know, I'm never sending them anything again, ever. They lost a shop customer for good. But I do trust him that he's going to do it the right way. But I know human nature, there's going to be a level of frustration that's going to be like, I just want it done. I just want it out of here. And so I'm worried about the attention to detail there.
Do you owe money?
What was the question?
Do you owe money to buy it out?
Oh, yes, yeah. So that's the thing I asked him. I was like, man, I'm concerned about how much this is going to cost me, because you gave me a range of, you know, it's going to be here, depending on what all goes into what they have to do. And he was like, well, obviously none of this is your fault. None of it's really my fault either. So the shop is going to eat... The machine shop is going to eat all of the extra work that they've had to do, and I'm eating all of the labor for this stuff, so you don't have to worry about that. And I'm like, all right, yeah, but you still gave me a range at the beginning. How much? Like, I don't know how much it's going to be. And he didn't have an answer, because he doesn't do the calculation for the... He's just the mechanic. But so I am still worried that it's going to be expensive.
Stupid, yeah.
But it's not like I'm not paying for 2 years worth of labor, you know. I put like $1,500
down. So you
probably
owe like another $3,000, maybe more.
So, yeah, probably something like that. So, of course, you know, like in 2 years, I mean, inflation. Like, I could owe $40,000 on the engine, and I wouldn't
even
know.
You should have just gave it to
Pacheco
Mechanics.
The economy has changed.
You
should have.
Well, you got a Bridgeport. You can machine. You can't rehone it, but you can machine the surface, right?
Yeah, I could have. I could have purchased and learned pretty much everything that I needed to do it myself. And if I had known it was going to take a long time, I would have. But, you know, he told me 6 to 8 weeks in the beginning. Mm. And it was funny, because he said the other day on the phone, he was like, the guy I was going to take it to, the guy that we trust the most, I didn't take it to, because he was 100 engines deep in rebuilds. And it was going to take like a year and something.
I'm like, free. Well,
maybe that would have been, it would have been half the time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the update. I still don't have it. Theoretically, I'll have it in a couple of weeks, but I thought theoretically I would have it by now, you know,
so,
a couple of weeks ago. So
even though Jimmy has suggested against this, I have gone back and forth on whether or not to keep or sell the Impala.
Mm.
And, I have absolutely no idea what it's worth. I don't even have a ballpark. I know what I paid for it, but I bought it. Like, it was my dad's, then it went to my uncle, and then I bought it from my uncle. And I got it from my uncle really cheap. And so I have absolutely no idea what it's worth.
What are the mileage?
I found...
What's the mileage?
This
is it,
local
is it accurate?
It's flipped over, so, and I can't remember. Maybe
130,000. Did your dad buy it new?
Maybe more. No, it's a 67, and he got it in 77, I believe. 77, 78, somewhere around there. So I called this one place. I'm like, hey, I'm just trying to, I will pay you to give me an estimate of what this is worth. And they're like, bring it in. And I bring it in, and they're like, yeah, we don't want it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not trying to sell it to you. I asked if I could get the value of this thing. And he's like, you should call Hagerty. They might be able to help you out with that. And so I'm trying to figure out what it's worth, because I'm not putting any money into it right now, and I'm not putting any work into it, and cars just don't get better with age. They right. they deteriorate. So it's I either have to throw money into it or I have to sell it. And it's just so big. It's just so in the way. And I don't know. I think I want to get rid of it.
Hmm. I would imagine our listeners seem to... There seems to be somebody in our listener pool that yeah. does every job in the world. Right. Somehow.
True.
which is amazing. So I would imagine that somebody listening right now is in that world, or at least knows somebody who's in that world. So if you do, reach out to David in the appropriate ways. Please.
Thank you.
That would be awesome. Yeah, I've found that, like, with the green Land Cruiser, it's in pretty bad shape. I mean, it runs well, but, you know, body, it's gonna deteriorate. Like you said, it's just, I can't leave it outside because it leaks, and, you know, I don't want it to get wet, so I keep it in the one garage that we have that's usable that, oh, there's a price on screen.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth that much. It can't be worth that much.
It's anywhere, the range is between $20,000 to $50,000, depending upon, you know, the engine and all that other good stuff.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
But the, you know, having the Green Cruiser, it gets me around, and I actually really enjoy driving it. But we bought a Ford Edge from my parents, because my dad got a new truck and stuff, and so we bought that so that our kids can have a car to drive, because they're at driving age, beginning to get there. So we have this reliable Ford car that I've been driving around just to get places and take people to things and everything. So I've had that for a month or two or something, and so I've been driving the Green Cruiser less. It's been sitting more, and I drove it the other day. I've been trying to, you know, drive it at least a little bit to keep it running and everything. And I drove it out to the farm the other day, and it was so much fun to drive. And it was funny because, you know, over the last couple of years, I've had to drive it, and it's like, I'm wrestling with getting it to run. I'm wrestling with the headlights. I'm wrestling with the suspension. And those things have kind of settled out to where they all work pretty well, consistently. And so driving it last week or whenever that was, it was just like, oh, this thing's fun. I don't even know that I want to do anything to this. It's just fun to drive around. The problem with that is that we now have the Ford Edge for the kids. Theoretically, I will be getting my White Cruiser back, which I will want to drive, and then we're going to have the Green Cruiser, and then eventually the Karma Ghia, and I'm like, where am I going to put all these cars?
Ask Jimmy.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah, there you go. Jimmy, can you build me a barn? You can have an annex of the farm. What? At my farm, and then I can park my cars.
So for the last several years down on Main Street, I own the go-kart track there, and there's a big parking lot in front, and I let friends have flea markets there and stuff. My buddy every Memorial Day does a big flea market tent on the site, and I don't charge them. I just let them have fun. And when my yard was getting crowded, I just started parking cars there. So I had three Chevys parked there, my two flatbeds and a little old green one. And every time I go there, there's notes stuck under these for sale, because they look like they're abandoned. But now with this... I talked in the after show. There's a commercial is going to shoot. There's details that I can't say until after it's all said and done. But a commercial is going to shoot here on my property. And in the commercial, they might use one of my trucks. So they saw all the trucks, the casting people, and they're like, they all run, they all drive. I haven't exercised any of them. I haven't been so busy. So because of that, remember I told you guys before we started, this commercial shoot coming to my house has forced me to clean a lot of things I haven't paid attention to in a long time. And so I'm cleaning up, doing a real big dust job inside the shop, organizing, getting rid of just, you know, I have a tendency to come home after shopping and putting bags down and never looking them again. You know, like I'll take the main thing I need, and then the box is filled with also the hardware, which I need when I need it. And I go to that bag sitting under the table. I should have put it away. That's a bad habit of mine. So I'm getting rid of all that riffraff. And I got all my Chevy trucks driving and running. In fact, on Instagram the other day, I think maybe I put it on Instagram. I changed the dashboard in one of them, and then I ordered the dashboard for another one because the Chevy truck dashboards all deteriorate in the sun. And
did you get like a original style dashboard, or did you get one of the new? Like I know on the Impala, you can get a new dashboard that just drops right in, but it's got all digital gauges.
This is just the dash pad. I don't get that deep. My truck would never run again if I took the dashboard apart like that. I'm not that smart. I just take the rubbery pad on top, and they're repros. And in fact, thanks to Keith Brennan the other day, I asked, the Army truck specifically has an interior color that is made only for the Army. It's this burgundy, which I've never seen in any other Chevy except for these Army trucks. Any Chevy nerds out there, it's the M1008 6.3 diesel, made specifically for the government, and it has this burgundy dashboard. And my dashboard is millions of pieces cracked. It's horrible. Like, pieces flake off onto your clothes every time you go near it. So the other day, Keith found the exact color for me from, not LMC, but another site. So thank you, Keith. So that's coming. I'm going to change that dashboard. But all this has forced me to get everything running and moving and exercised and gassed up and check the oil and take all the mice traps out, or take all the mice nests out of all the carburetors. So everything's running and driving and I'm weed whacking and doing all that stuff. So it was a good kick in the butt to get me on all the trucks. I definitely still want another project. I keep looking. I want either a 50s Cadillac or a 40s Chrysler convertibles. Either one would be a convertible. So I'm looking for Chrysler Woody from the 40s or a 50s Cadillac convertible. And they're either $100,000 or they're $20,000, and they're in part buckets. These guys get into these projects and dismantle the car down to like the core metal. And then they go,
I don't know anything about that.
And so they have two garage bays full of parts and chrome and everything. Everything's perfect, but it's completely taken apart. Then there's a 57, 58 convertible Eldorado on. I would love to have it, but it messed with you. He wants $20,000. I never talk to him because it's just a basket case. Anyway, so that I'm looking for a convertible Cadillac 58 or 57 if anybody's in the market or looking. I would also take a nice 67 convertible if anybody's got a granny's car sitting in the garage, grandpa's parade car sitting in the garage that doesn't run. I'll take it. Just as long as there's no rust. I'm at this stage of my life where I don't ever want to deal with cutting out metal again. Bob.
Working on a car is probably not the thing you want
to
do.
I'm trying to find. The other day, Rob and I were driving, and he said, whoa, there's a nose sticking out of a garage. I'm like, what is it? He goes, that's a Cadillac of some sort. So we made a big U-turn in the country, and we drove back to the house, and the woman was in the garden. And I go, hey, do you mind if I ask you about the car? And she's like, oh, it was my grandfather's car. We parked it, and we haven't used it since. It's a 1967 convertible DeVille. She said they parked it when he passed away. The sticker on it is from 1979. So the car was parked when it was only about 10 years old. And it's in the garage with a canoe on the roof, on the convertible roof mechanism. There's a canoe sitting on it. And every garden tool in the entire garage is on the front hood or the back hood. And it's got 45 years worth of dirt on it. It's a little dinged up from sitting in the garage. It's by no means a perfect car, but it's got low miles, and it hasn't been sitting outside in the mud and the dirt. So I said, she's like, well, we don't have the key, and we don't have any of the documentation. She's like, but when we're ready to sell it, and I gave her my card, I said, look me up, I restore things. She said, I want to sell it, but I don't want to sell it to a junkyard that's going to take it apart and sell it in pieces. I was like, no. I said, if you give it to me, or if we make a deal, I will restore it to the best of my ability. It might not be a show car, but I'll get it running and driving and everything like that. And she's like, well, so next time I drive over there, I'm going to nudge her and see what she's thinking. But anyway, looking for that type of thing, as long as there's no rust. The 67 Cadillac that I bought off Facebook Market about 5 years ago for $1,000 that was running and driving when I got it, I dismantled it, and then I realized how much work it really was involved, and the dashboard was roasted because it had been outside in the rain and snow with an open top, so the dashboard was completely roasted. I lost my mojo for the project, and I gave it to my friend Mike. So when people ask, a lot of people ask me, like, what happened to that project? I worked on it a little bit, and I ended up giving it to Mike because I needed the room, just like you. I didn't even sell it to him. I just gave it to him. And so I'm looking for something with a little bit less of a deep dive. You can't do a full car restoration unless it takes up your entire garage. You can't do it outside. Unless it's in already good shape. That's my long story.
Gotcha. David, we haven't heard what you've been working on. What have you been doing?
Yeah, to bring everybody down, I've been working on pet urns. So, Weens passed away a couple years ago, and we had him cremated, and the vet gives you this cheap little box, and it's got his name.
Does it come in the gold handled paper bag?
No, I don't. Oh, I don't.
Because I got from my vet. So. It must be the local service. There's like 7 cremations in my foyer here, and we have. I think one day I was planning on doing something with all of them, but that's 20 years worth of animals.
Mm. Well, so I've been like Weens meant a lot to me. Like I had him for 15 years, and like. I became known as the wiener dog guy. So like it became my identity. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to make him something special. And it turned into one of those things where like, I'll wait for the right idea because it's got to be that special. And then 2 years passed by and we realized like, unless you put aside time, ideas just don't pop in your head. And my friend Krista, she's our dog sitter. When I met her, she had 4 or 3 wiener dogs herself. And I met her because she bought one of my art pieces, which was a illustration of a wiener dog, just kind of like a silhouette, and then had a detailed photo drawing of a brain where his brain was. Like, so she bought this art piece called Wiener Brains. And she was like, hey, I have 3 wiener dogs. Yeah. Bob's laughing. And I was like, yeah, I have a wiener dog. And then we became friends and she became my dog sitter. And one of her dogs recently passed away and she wasn't ready. She was devastated. And so I wanted to surprise her by making an urn for her dog. And I'm like, well, since I'm doing that, I'm finally going to make one for Weens. We've also have our cat who is also in the same cheap little box. I'll make one for our cat Sydney. And then as I've known Krista, all of her wiener dogs have passed away through old age. Like I've known her for like 12 years or something. And so I'm like, well, if I'm making her one urn, I might as well make her 3 other urns that match. So I made 6 pet urns. This is a lot of dead pets, I know. And they're all personalized, but they all mesh. And so that's what I've been working on. And that video is probably going to come out on Friday. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, it's not a happy thing to do, but it is a cool thing to do. I mean,
I purposely say in the beginning of the video, this is not going to be a sad video. I want this to be a celebration. So I don't make it sappy. I don't make it sad. There's no slow piano. I still try to make it fun. So, yeah, I don't cry in the video. I cried, but I didn't cry in the video.
Yeah, not with the camera on.
Yeah. So, that's what I've been working on. And it should be out in a couple days.
Cool. Okay. Well, I had kind of an idea, something that's been on my mind. We haven't really talked about this beforehand. And this may not even be a real conversation. But I did have something that I've been thinking about a lot. Okay, so I'm trying to figure out how to ask this. This is not content related. Okay, so we've talked about changing our content over time. We've talked about how we have to evolve and our interests change and stuff like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about your personal decisions, priorities, preferences, that type of thing. Okay? In light of being seen by a lot of people, because we are seen by a lot of people, relative, like to just people that go to a job and they come home and they see their friends and they see people they know. We are more visible, right? So the question is, do you allow yourself to change? Have you allowed yourself to change over time? Or do you feel any sort of a I need to stick to the thing that I'm known for. Mm. I need to stick to the thing that I've accomplished. I need to stick to the way I've been.
Yeah.
You know, between those two, like, extremes, where do you find yourself? And has that changed
over
time?
Well, it's funny. I just had this conversation with somebody privately the other day. I told you guys when Jocko was here, and he's like, you're not relatable anymore. And he wasn't sliding me. You know, we love Jocko to death. And I got a little gut punch. I'm like, I guess I'm not. You know, I have this, like, fancy farm, it seems like, and it seems like I have these fancy cars, which they're all cheap as garbage, but just looks abundant, and I have lots of free tools that just seems abundant, and I have this life of abundance with all these properties and stuff. And honestly, that's what I've been striving for, and I've arrived, and I feel happy. And the change, yeah, when I look around, you know, Rachel's constantly reminding me. She's like, look what you've built, look what you've built. You know, because she always reminds me how I don't feel like I've accomplished enough. We always talk. She works with artists who've accomplished financially hundreds of millions of dollars. She works with some artists, and sometimes I look at that and I'm like, wow, I work so hard, and I feel like I'm just scraping by. But she's like, you're not scraping by. She's like, you're successful. You know, she constantly reminds me. I'm always down on myself because I feel like I haven't accomplished enough. But then Jocko tells me I'm not relatable anymore because I look rich, and I look around and I'm like, do I have too much stuff? But I'm happy. I'm happy with everything I've accomplished. I'm happy with my toys that I play with. And the consequence of, you know, I have to manage. It's a struggle. Not really, but it's a struggle to make sure that the place doesn't get ratty and that I don't have too many. Like, if I have a car, it has to run and drive. It can't just sit and devolve into a mud pile. You know, these are the type of OCD things I have to make sure. And I do want other cars, and I have to make sure that, like, I really resist buying other projects. I just want this one project, and that'll be all I need for probably the next 7 or 8 years, I think, until something interesting comes along. But I'm happy with where I've evolved to. And if it gets down to, you know, the consequences, I'm not relatable anymore to YouTube, that's okay, because I'm really happy with where I am, and I'm relatable to some people. Yeah, my videos still get 100,000 views. They're not getting 250,000 or 500,000 like they used to, but I'm super happy, and I've created this place that has tremendous potential. I'm having, like, a major credit card company shoot a commercial here next week, and I'm getting paid a lot of money for that, and it's awesome. And I get to watch, like, an incredible production company come in and make a movie with a celebrity in my backyard for 3 days. And I never could have gotten here if I didn't allow myself to just keep growing and letting things happen, and I'm okay with where I am. The struggle that I feel like I'm not successful enough keeps me motivated. But how can we stay the same? Nobody can stay the same. Look at everybody's life 10 years at a time. If you're not changing, it seems like there's something wrong with you. Yeah.
I find myself, I am very influenced by other people. And when I see other people change or do something, I get inspired to do the same. And so, like, looking for that permission to do something different or to change, it's a little hard on my own. But when I see somebody else do it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do that too. And I've done that so many times in my life. A few times where I imitated too much, but sometimes I take things too far and then I dial it back and then I find my own way. That seems to be the path that I keep taking. And I've changed careers. I went to school for graphic design, and then I became a web developer,
That was the big world shift.
And then
from being a graphic designer making, like, Rolling Stone magazine editorials, to then all of a sudden the web became something that was applicable to the same job description, but nobody foresaw it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't even get into woodworking until like 12 years ago or something. And, like, I have allowed myself to change because I've allowed myself to be influenced by what I see other people doing.
So what about your personal, let's step back from, like, job success, your personal, like, preferences and the habits and the things that you spend your time on and the clothes that you wear and the stuff that ultimately is really inconsequential.
Yeah.
Has any of that ever been a block for you to change because, and this is kind of getting into old man territory, but because you've always been that way?
Yeah. I can think of a couple quick examples. Like, you know, back in the 90s, like, there was a certain type of music that I liked, and it had a little bit of aggression to it. Like, everything was Nirvana and that whole grunge era. And anything that was a little bit more melodic or softer or I can't think of the right word, meaningful, like, no, I wouldn't even allow that in, because I listened to this. This is, and I look back on that and I think, man, I missed out on so many other types of music, bands. Like, I hated Sonic Youth back in the day. I hated The Cure back in the day. Now I love those two bands. I like because I had these little blocks. And then you know, I never thought I would be I looked at, like, people who own a truck, that's a certain type of person. People who have a classic car, that's a certain type of person. That's a personality. That's not me. And now I have a classic car. I'm a truck guy. I have a truck. And, like, there's so many things. I created way too many blocks and barriers at a younger age. And maybe everybody does, or maybe it's just me. I don't know. But I am more open to things now. And I think that's just because of the people
variety,
that I've met.
The variety of our
just
audience.
Just getting older.
Yeah, that's. I mean, me being a teacher, there isn't any personality that I could meet. I was an art school teacher for 24 years. So there isn't any personality that I could meet that will shock me, that I can't just look directly into that person's eyes, have a conversation with them as a human being, regardless of whatever their preferences are, or whatever they want to be at that moment, or what they feel like changing into, is totally cool. So, like, I'm totally okay with whatever anybody else wants to do. No matter who I meet, no matter what I encounter, whether it's a homeless person, or I talk to them like they're a human being. I really try to do that. I don't look down on anybody. I try and keep them completely on my level. And, you know, it's only been obviously good for me. So when I see somebody being so judgmental about somebody's life, I'm like, wow, the person has so much more maturing to do, is what I feel. Because I was like that when I was a teenager. I was like that, you know. I had this aggressive behavior and was very territorial and all that other BS. But the other thing too, as I get older, I've really tried to let go of anything that will get me angry. I'm looking forward to your story, Bob, but I'm really trying to look, I really, as an example that came up while I was thinking, the other day, Ken, my stonemason, rolls into the driveway. He doesn't have a cell phone, so if he needs me, he has to drive 3 miles to my house to find me in the yard and talk to me. And when he comes waddling up the grass, I'm like, uh-oh, something's wrong. And because it takes a lot for him to come over here. And I knew they were digging out the front of the foundation of the house that morning, and I was going to run over there. I missed the initial dig out, but I got over there because he came to get me. He's like, I don't want you to be upset. I don't want you to be shocked. I'm like, okay, well, what is it? And he goes, we found our way into the basement from the outside of the building. I go, okay, so the foundation wall collapsed a little bit. He's like, just a little bit. And I was like, and I said, all right, so it's nothing we can't fix. He's like, no, nothing. I'm like, I did not for the slightest bit feel any energy about it. And I was like, whatever. I go, you know what? It'll be more fun for the video. That's the first thing I said. I don't want to create $5,000 more foundation work.
Right.
But if it happens, it happens. Whatever. And at the end of the day, it's just going to be better than it was when we started, because we know the sill plate's not rotted. Yeah. So I go over there. We drive over there. And they were digging out the foundation outside to try and shore it up just to see how bad it was, because it's all just stacked stone from 100 years ago and it's all shifted. And there's tons of mortar jammed in there from attempted repairs. And as they were digging, all of a sudden the wall just started crumbling and it just fell into the basement. Only about 2 feet from the sill plate down across about 15 feet. And so Ken removed it all. The house is standing. We got jacks under it holding it up. And it's not as bad. And I didn't for the slightest bit feel any gut punch. And maybe that's just me maturing into nothing is going to surprise me at this point, short of a fire, which is, you know, everyone's biggest fear. there's nothing that could surprise me, you know, car accidents, as long as everyone's okay. You know, I'm at that point in my life where it's like, all right. The only constant thing that I've learned at my age, 57, is everything's going to constantly change. That's the only thing. You get to a comfortable place and you're like, this is comfortable. Don't get too comfortable, because financially you're going to get kicked in the gut. Changes, relationships break up that you never thought in your million years would ever end. You know, changes. I'm the only one here now doing all the maintenance. I was literally billy goating with this machine, billy goating the grass last night at midnight, making sure the house looks good for this thing. I don't have anybody helping me. There's nobody sorting the garbage. It's all just me. And I love it. I love being the one person in charge of everything. Because if I put a rake on a tree, in 3 days from now, it's going to be sitting on that tree. I'm not going to pick up a chainsaw and it will have cut a rock. The last time I used the chainsaw was the last time the chainsaw got used. So, but these are all things I didn't foresee. You know, it's I'm totally content. And yeah, there was a time in my life where any one of these things would set me off. I'd get completely angry. I'd get nervous. And, you know, it seems the more money I spend, the money just keeps coming back to me. I'm knocking wood. So I've gotten to this place where, like, money is flowing. If I work hard, money keeps flowing. If I spend it, it keeps coming back. I'm not spending it frivolously. Most of my money I earn goes into this property. So I'm not frivolously spending on things that aren't going to bring me back, you know, bring back a financial gain somehow, some way. But I don't know. I think I've talked enough.
Well, I mean, the reason that this has been on my mind, I've been changing a lot in the last, I don't know, year or so. I've just changed a lot of different things about myself and how I spend my time and the things that I, just a bunch of stuff. And most of that is not necessarily stuff that I want to, like, make a point about or anything. But I think the reason that it's on my mind all the time is because I think everybody has a picture of themselves. They have a picture of, like, I'm this type of person, or I do things this way, and they have this view of themselves, and it's partially based on truth. It's partially based on how they want to be, the ideal. It's partially based on the feedback that they get from other people. And so you have this kind of multi-sided picture of who you are relative to all those things. And a lot of times that there's certain things about that picture of yourself that are not fully true, and or not, you don't have a complete view of. And the reason I'm getting to this part of it is because I was on a podcast, like, it's been a while now, I don't know, 9 months ago or something like that, and it was this Enneagram podcast where they, like, do your personality profile, whatever. They kind of, like, ask you a whole bunch of questions and whatever, and I don't know anything about that stuff, and I don't buy into, like, being prescribed to be a certain way by answering a bunch of questions fully, but it was a cool conversation, and a few things I said along the way, the two people that were interviewing me were like, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense. That kind of a thing. And I'm like, what? Hang on, what? And so that got me thinking, just that the conversation with them got me thinking more about stuff that I kind of took for granted. Well, everybody's probably this way. Everybody thinks this is important. Everybody looks at themselves this way. And maybe that's not the case. And so it was the first time where I was like, wait, maybe I'm not, you know, like, maybe I am not actually the way I think I am, or maybe whatever. So through that, I've learned a lot more about the fact that I really value stability, not for myself. I can handle things not being stable. I value my ability to be stable for other people, my family specifically, people that rely on me. And when the whole business changed and we had to let people go and, like, everybody moved on to new things, that was incredibly hard for me. And now I realize it's because I felt like I was completely failing at being a stable point for those people. So I found a lot of things start to connect when I started to realize that, like, I didn't know that that was such a, like, an integral part of me, is that I need to provide stability for other people around me. And so I started thinking more about that and about how I don't necessarily care what people think about me from one perspective, like opinionated perspective, but I care about letting people down. I'm getting, this is all connected, just a big long train of thought. So I found those two things about myself. I want to provide stability for people, and I'm really not comfortable letting people down for something. I feel very responsible to people. And then I realized, through thinking through all this stuff and spending time every morning, like thinking about things, I realized that there were a lot of things about me that I was hanging on to that I was unwilling to change because I had this weird impression that they were causing stability, or people know me as this thing. That's maybe a better way to say it. People know me as this way. I do these things, and that's how they define me. And I don't want to let them down. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't want to let them down. I don't want to become something that they weren't expecting. And a lot of this is just through the view of like social media and just being visible to people. I think if I was on a mountain by myself and I didn't feel responsibility to other people, then this wouldn't have even come up. But anyway, so I'm working through, and have been working through for a year or so, like allowing myself to not feel responsible for stuff that is like doesn't even matter. Like, I got new glasses. This is how weird I think about this stuff. I'm kind of exposing myself here a little bit. I got new glasses like maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago or something. First time I'd gotten different glasses since I got glasses the first time, like 7 years ago. And I was like anxious about having a video with the new glasses on. Because I was like, it's going to, like, people are going to say stuff. I don't even want people to say stuff about it. Just like ignore it, you know, like I don't want it to be a thing. And I made this in my head. I made this into like, this is going to be a thing I'm going to have to deal with for a video or two, and then it will go away and it's not a big deal. Literally nobody said anything about new glasses. Nobody.
Yeah.
And I just built this thing up in my head that was like, I need to maintain because people are whatever. And it's so stupid. So the point of all this stuff is that I'm finding the freedom to just change stuff because I'm an, like you said, Jimmy, I'm an evolving person. And even though stuff evolves on the inside all the time, I've been resistant to allow a lot of other stuff to evolve. My preference in music, things like that. I've been resistant because I feel like a responsibility or something that I think is wrong. I think it's incomplete. And so I'm finding the freedom to allow myself to just become today. And I wanted to bring it up because it's been on my mind so much that I think there's probably somebody listening right now that is stuck in that exact same spot, that feels too responsible to other people to allow themselves to evolve and like grow in good ways. You know, I'm not saying like, hey, I should pick up drinking. Like, we should drink a lot. That'd be really, you know, I'm not talking about stuff like that. I mean, like, there's probably some good stuff for you that you haven't done for some reason.
Well, yeah. I know there was humans.
For me. And just we giving myself a little grace there we're afraid
to change.
Free.
Like, it's really what you said. Like, you get locked in. Everybody expects you to be this person that does these things. And then suddenly you realize, like, you want to maybe do something different. But you're conscious of who's watching.
And I think a lot of that,
you're conscious of who's noticing.
I think a lot of that expectation I'm putting on other people, but it is truly in my head.
Yeah.
It's not real.
It's not there at all.
And so somebody needs to hear that, I think, probably. So
didn't you recommend a video within the last couple months of like nobody cares or nobody's even gonna notice? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yeah, I do. Yep.
Can we revisit that? What do you know what it's called?
I don't know what it's called. I was actually thinking about that yesterday on my run, and it was, to anybody that didn't hear that one, I ran across this random video about this guy who had long hair. He had had long hair all of his life. He went to college. He met a whole new group of people and was like, I need to make a big change. I'm gonna shave my head, and it's going to be like everybody's going to freak out because I've got long hair. And he shaved his head, and he had this video of him shaving his head, and nobody cared.
Cool.
Nobody said anything.
I watched the video and I was like, that's a really good video. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was making the point that like selfishly everybody is a little focused on their own stuff to where, you know, they don't care so much about what anybody else does. I mean, you know, generally. But it was also making a bigger point that, like, we put so much pressure on ourselves to, based on the effect that we're going to have on other people or how important we are to other people and stuff. And he was making a really good point that, like, you're supposed to change and nobody really cares that you change. Like,
the other day, Rachel posted this picture of us together that was me and her and a turkey. And I said, I look horrible in that picture. She's like, do you want me not to post it? I was like, I don't care. Post it. I go, I look horrible. I go, I look like I got a big ham for a head. And she's like, I won't post it. I was like, I don't care. I go, I'm just telling you what. She's like, do you like this picture? That was what prompted the conversation. I was like, no, I look horrible. And she's like, oh, I won't post it. I'm like, post it. It doesn't matter. I go, I can only control the infantile millisecond of a time that I see myself. The other rest of my entire life, other people look at me, and I can't control that. I have no idea what people... Mm. Everybody has this image of me that I can't control. I was like, so we just got into this little philosophical conversation, and I said, I go, I don't really post it. It doesn't matter. I can't control what I look like to other people. When I see myself and I'm like, oh, that's not the best picture. Everybody sees me from the left and the right and the back and everything anyway. I can't change that.
Well, so here's an interesting thing about that picture that totally goes into what you're saying. I saw that picture. And the thing that I took from that picture was, man, it's cool. This, yeah, I was like, he looks like a ham. No, I was like, no, the thing that I took from that picture was, that's awesome. I have never seen a picture of him and Rachel together. I don't even know what she looks like. And he's happy and they're having a good time. I didn't notice your head or anything. It was cool to see you in a moment in that relationship, you know, being happy. And that, so, yes. The perspective that we all see the same thing from is very, very different. The way that we look at ourselves versus how other people look at us and what's important to them.
Yep.
Totally different. So I'm having, a reckoning, you know, with myself about loosening up and about not feeling so bound to provide. It's not about that. It's about, like, letting people down or their opinion of things that are...
Well, you know what? A lot of times I'll come to the conclusion if I'm in a situation where I feel like I'm letting somebody down, I have to remind myself I'm doing the best I can. I have no ill will towards anybody. I'm not trying to get revenge on anybody. It's funny. So I even forget who I'm mad at sometimes. Like I'll see somebody and like somebody's like, didn't you guys have a thing? I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Like I'm really at a point now where I forget who I have grudges against. I just let it go, and
that's a good thing.
That was a bigger point to my line of conversation, but I forgot it. But anyway, yep.
Well, that's two things you've forgotten in the last sentence. So maybe there's a different issue, but. Well, anyway, that was just my train of thought about change.
As long as it goes in a positive direction.
Any other thoughts on that?
We give you permission to change.
Positive change.
I agree. Cool. Well, you know, I've been out of town, and so I have not watched anything. I have one recommendation for this week, but it is like, I haven't actually watched any of the videos. We'll get to that. Do you guys have anything you want to recommend?
I just watched this morning Morley Kurt make the round chair. You ever see the chair that you could sit in?
Dang it, Jimmy.
Yeah. I got you. And, it's great. And Morley's got great energy. I met Morley years and years ago when he was just starting, and it's great to see how fast and well he's growing. He's doing amazing. His energy is just amazing, and he makes a chair with a 3D print farm, takes a chair and cuts it into 70 pieces and has them all printed. Instead of taking one big giant print. And I was wondering, Joel Telling's in that video for a second. He has the same printer that you have, I think. Is it that same giant one? The same one? And he described a couple of fatal problems with his. Are you having any of those problems?
I have not had any of those yet. But after he had his problems, I called him. And we did a FaceTime walking around the machine. And he was telling me all the stuff that he changed on his. And it's significant. Like, he put in a lot. Mm-hmm. Of modification to get that thing working, but it works.
So yours, have you encountered the same problems, or are you not putting it to the same rigorous test?
No. I will do some of the same changes, but I'm not going to go as far as he did. I mean, 3D printing is like the thing that he does. Yeah. It is a thing that I do. So Well, David disappeared, so I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters real quick. Oh, he's back. But I'm still going to do that. Big thanks to everybody on Patreon for supporting the show. And, you know, they all get the after show. I'll tell you about my my very, very frustrating event this episode. But it's not all frustrating events. Usually there we talk about, like, you know, secret stuff, upcoming stuff in the after show. And that's only available to Patreon supporters. So if you want that, you can go to patreon.com/makingit. And join up at any level, and then you will be on the list, like, with other awesome supporters, like Crabtree Creative. Mike, do you like that transition? That was pretty good. I mean, I think that was pretty good. Anyway, Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Designs, Chad's Custom Creations, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan. But also, people like... Oh, no, where did my browser go? Also, people like Paul Mitchell. Isn't Paul Mitchell like a hair?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a hair company?
I know a lot about hair.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. You know, I mean, anyway. I can picture the Paul Mitchell logo right now.
Yeah. I remember, like, getting my hair cut as a kid, and there was always this counter with, like, black and white. There were white bottles with black text on them. It's like Paul Mitchell stuff. Yeah, anyway. I'm sure that's not the same Paul Mitchell, but either way, thanks for being here, Paul.
He's so sick of hearing it. It's like the Michael Bolton character.
The Michael Bolton thing, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Paul. All right. Do you have another recommendation, David? Or did he steal
the
one that you
had? I do want to say that Morley's video about the 3D printed chair, is the reason it's so good and the reason it's doing so well is because it's not just like, hey, I 3D printed a chair. It's like, hey, this is a journey that I went on to make this chair. We had ups and downs, and it was just a good video. So I guess my backup recommendation is a channel that absolutely needs no help. But the two of the guys from Donut Media,
they peeled off.
Left Donut, they started their own channel. And as soon as I saw their, like, why we're leaving Donut video, and so they only have three videos, but dang it, YouTube is just like wants me to watch their videos every single day. Like, I didn't watch their two new videos right away, but anytime I logged into YouTube, it's like the very first recommendation for days and days. YouTube made me watch their videos, but they're good. And and it's good to see them do something, I guess, it's a little bit more independent and with their own voice and doing what they want to do. So it's called Big Time.
Yeah. So when I was out there working with Donut on that video, Jeremiah was one of the guys that I got to, like, talk to a little bit. And he's an ex-engineer. He used to do, like, biomechanical engineering or something like that, and so we kind of connected on, like, engineering stuff and fusion, and, you know, we were talking about that, and I really enjoyed talking to him. The other people were nice, I guess. It was kind of a weird experience, but I really liked him. And so when I saw that he and Zach wasn't there that day, so I didn't get to meet him, but when I saw that the two of them were going off to do their own thing, I was like, yeah, like, that's exciting. I'm kind of glad you're off, you know, on your thing. So anyway, I'm enjoying Big Time videos as well. Yeah, a lot of fun. Let's see, so for me, mine is, I've actually never seen the videos on this channel, but I watched the guy that is in the videos on Instagram. He goes by Craws on Instagram, and the channel's called Crucible Coachworks, and he builds cars, but he's just a lot of fun. He has a great personality to him and everything. And he's making this this car called... Oh, what's he calling it now? I forgot the name of the car.
Wait. Pause. Don't leave.
It's called the Jigsaw. Project Jigsaw. And so he's building a car from scratch or on some chassis or something like that. But he's building all the body panels. And it's like this really curvy... It's a very, very cool looking car. He does a lot of 3D printing stuff and all this fabrication and everything. So anyway, it's pretty cool thing. I'm anxious to watch some of the videos on YouTube. I just haven't done it yet, but I wanted to throw him out there as some new car thing to watch if you're interested.
Jimmy just sent photos to us of you can enter his basement through a
non-entrance passageway.
Entrance.
You should put a slide there.
That's the mail slot when you get big giant UPS packages.
Yeah, so UPS can drop giant packages.
Slot. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
The foundation had shifted, so it wasn't quite under the sill plate. It was off. It was off center. So when they jostled it around, it all just started falling apart. Which they said the good thing is that we know that sill plate that was buried nearly in the ground. It was completely embedded in dirt up until the sill plate on the outside, so you couldn't see what the rocks are doing. And the sill plate is not rotted at all. It seems like the original sill plate for the house, which is however many hundred years old. And it's got a couple of surface rots, but it's not in need of replacing. So that's good. Now it's getting good.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned your stone guy not having a cell phone, the first thing that came to my head was Goodfellas. I think his name is Paulie. He didn't have a phone of his own, so he had to go use other people's phones to conduct his mob business.
He's just such an old school hippie. He does not care about being. He's like, I just don't want people to bother me, because when I'm not working, I don't want to talk to anybody about anything.
I love in the one photo where it's inside looking out. I love how, I don't know what the proper term is, the joists are just logs, like a half a log.
Yeah. This is a little, and I should really go through this more in one of my upcoming videos about the house. The house I'm in now was built in 1790, and that house supposedly was built in 1792 or 93. They are, in my estimation, built by the same person. It is crazy, because when you look at my basement, so many similarities. And the crazy thing is about my house and that house has joists and hand-hewn timbers that were someplace else first. There's pockets that lead to nowhere. So a lot of the structures up here are recycled structures made from recycled bits and pieces of timber. And I took apart the whole back part of the house to rebuild and put all the new construction in. And I saved all those timbers. So if this was 200 years ago, I'd be like, who wants to buy my timbers to build a house? So I might use them in the house, and you'll see where there's pockets and stuff in there.
I mean, it probably makes sense that they were built by the same person. If you're in that same area, surely there's not that many people that build houses at that time.
There's no reason why it makes perfect sense. It's the same guy built both places with the same team. But I'll do a comparison video and show the similarities between the basements. That's really the main thing, is the basements. The exterior house is built a little bit different. Yeah.
Cool. All right, well, let's go to the after show so I can tell you about my story.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Catch you next time.